A lot of entrepreneurs that I talk to believe that their central through line for growth comes exclusively from their marketing tactics. But what actually drives opportunity is relationship capital. It's up to 60% more expensive to find a new client than it is to nurture an existing one.
Who likes to get a cold call? Who likes to get a cold email? Who likes to get a cold LinkedIn message? I mean, like, that's not something that any of us are very excited about.
I know for a fact that, Garima, you are selling a service. I don't exactly know what it is, but I doubt you're just filling your time with shits and giggles to be on LinkedIn. I get it. So why can't you just strike up a conversation with you?
I guarantee you, in your own network, in your own personal space, there are people who don't even know what you do and how you do it. And if you just start telling your story and activating your network, things change.
The fastest path to growth might still be the oldest one, real human connection.
Your network at the end of the day is your net worth.
If you're new here, welcome. I'm excited that you've joined us. Every single week, I get to sit down with CEOs, leaders, founders, builders who are doing something really fantastic on the planet. They're building a business that's making a difference in other people's lives. And I get the opportunity to sit down and chat with them and learn how they're doing it. The lessons, the failures, the opportunities, and they're going to leave you and me every single week with some nugget, mini nuggets actually, that you can integrate, implement into your business to do the same thing. So I'm glad you're here. Sit back, let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Branding Laboratory. I am your host, Devo, and this show is a little bit different than most podcasts I listen to. It's less of a traditional interview, and it's more of a thinking room, if you will. We're going to explore the intersection between identity and strategy and the psychology behind building companies and the leaders behind them. And sometimes we just examine what's working and what's not. Sometimes we take a peek at the friction that a lot of entrepreneurs and founders encounter when they're trying to scale something meaningful. And today we're going to step into a really meaningful conversation about something that's surprisingly simple, but incredibly overlooked by a lot of entrepreneurs. Relationships. Because in a world that is obsessed with funnels and automation and marketing and all the latest and greatest hacks, the fastest path to growth might still be the oldest one, real human connection. So my guest today, Garima Shah, she is the co-founder and president of Biller Genie, which is a SaaS platform, and they're helping businesses automate their accounts, their accounts receivable processes, and get paid faster. And that's a good thing, right? Who doesn't want to get paid faster? But beyond the company, she's building culture inside the company itself. And she has spent years thinking about and forging the ideas around leadership and culture and how relationships shape opportunity inside organizations and across industries. Garima, welcome to the lab.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Green, before we talk about software, which is the company you run and payments and getting paid and automation and all those cool things, I want to start with something you said when we first met. And it's one of the things that's really near and dear to my heart. It really stood out to me. And it's going to be the central through line for the show. You said something that really cuts out a lot of the noise. And I literally just finished a workshop with 20 or so, 25 entrepreneurs. And one of the things that was amazingly glaring is that how many of them are focusing on actual relationships, actual clients that they have currently in their database. But you said yesterday in the call, it's about activating the relationships you already have. And I'm like, duh, but how many people don't really spend time focusing on that? So let's start there. Why do you think so many early entrepreneurs or even businesses in general, I guess not just an early entrepreneur thing, I work with some small companies who've been around for a while, make a good amount of money, and they're spending all this time trying to fill their funnel, which is cool. It's important. I get that. But they also have an entire database that they've been servicing for years. And I was like, when was the last time you reached out to any of these people? And they're like, what do you mean reach out to them? Bro. So anyhow, why do you think a lot of businesses and just businesses in general are always chasing new opportunities when sometimes the fastest path to growth might already be inside their existing network?
I mean, I think so much of this is like shiny object syndrome, right? Like, it's like, oh my gosh, what if? And like, what if I sign the next $10 million deal and what does that do? I think that sometimes, you know, people don't realize that a bird in hand is better than two in a bush or whatever they say. Mm. It's all of that. For us, the reason why we always worked with our existing network was really out of necessity, right? Like, when you start trying to fill a funnel with all new clients, all new everything else, that's a lot of, that's cost of acquisition is really high. Mm. And can you justify that cost of acquisition? How long is your payback? I also think that often And this is not to dog on new entrepreneurs or anything like that. But I often think that they're not managing by the numbers. And at the end of the day, if it takes you thousands of dollars to acquire an account, or forget the account, a lead, and then what's your conversion rate on that lead? And how long is the payback? If you're charging someone $20 a month, how long is the payback on that? And what happens if they attrit, and how much are you out? And have you done all of that modeling before you went and started going after that new shiny object? Because I guarantee you, in your own network, in your own personal space, there are people who don't even know what you do and how you do it. And if you just start telling your story and activating your network, things change.
It really is something as simple as that. And if you're very strategic about it and very purposeful about your messaging, which is one of the things that I teach, is you can't just start throwing spaghetti noodles at a wall when you're existing. For new customers or existing customers, you still have to have a central message with consistency, with some sort of a through line on what problem you're going to solve for them. Why should they do that energetic exchange with your financial exchange? I saw a data point, and you may know this better than me, and I know there's some variability to this, but it's up to 60% more expensive to find a new client than it is to nurture an existing one. Do you agree with that relatively number-wise?
I completely agree. And I think it's actually even higher than that, depending on the space that you're in. Because who likes to get pitched? Who likes to get a cold call? Who likes to get a cold email? Who likes to get a cold LinkedIn message? I mean, like, that's not something that any of us are very excited about. And look, you might be selling the exact thing that I need, but man, I don't really want that cold call. And I was a cold caller. I started out in commission only outside sales. So I get it. I did it. And I think there's a huge effect of direct marketing. I think it's fantastic. But I think at the end of the day, people buy from who they know, mm-hmm. and they work with who they know. And your network at the end of the day is your net worth.
Somebody, I sat in a workshop 2 weeks ago, and one of the keynote speakers said that the know, like, trust, that's dead. There's a different way of doing business now. You have to jump straight into selling the value without giving the know, like. And I was like, what customer do you know that's selling that's going to buy from you right away, like right off the bat? Maybe you might get somebody here and there, but interesting that you said that, which is also kind of interesting to me. I think we met you on LinkedIn. And one of the things that rubs me more than anything else, first of all, we all know that you have a business. Like, it's an implied logic that you have a business and you're probably selling something. Like, we understand that, bro. We get it.
Absolutely.
Stop coming at me 24/7 with nothing but selling tactics. And you just said it earlier, like, how obnoxious is it? Everyone's doing it. How come nobody can figure out that a better way to sell is through what you said, build a relationship, just strike up a conversation with me. I know for a fact that, Garima, you are selling a service. I don't exactly know what it is, but I doubt you're just filling your time with shits and giggles to be on LinkedIn and do whatever it is you do on LinkedIn. I get it. So why can't you just strike up a conversation with you? Why do you think that this has just escaped the central logic of so many people?
I don't know. And I think it's such an interesting thing because people used to talk about sales and it had the stigma and all of a sudden it became really cool again to be in sales. And I think people just thought that, oh, I could just make a bunch of calls and people will buy things. And it's like, or you could get in an elevator and tell someone exactly the whole idea of an elevator pitch to me feels like it's dead. You know, we ask our new hires every day, like, how are you going to explain to your parents what you do? Because if you can't tell your parents and your friends what you do in two sentences, you shouldn't work here. You shouldn't work anywhere. Because it's not about the elevator pitch just because you need it to go pitch someone an elevator, but it's, do you understand what you're doing, what value you're providing, and why you're doing it for your end user? And if you understand that well, you can explain it to anybody. And that network effect of being able to do that and someone else saying, oh, yeah, you know, actually, I know this person who told me that they do something like that. And you make it so, so simple, as opposed to, I've definitely gotten sales calls from people who they just try to talk in all of these very specific technical terms. You're like, dude, what do you do? What do you do? And why do you do it? And how does it affect me? Just tell me what you do.
You're speaking my jam. And I'm funny that you said parents, because let me tell you what I used earlier in this conference. I said, how many of you have children? And they were like, half of them raised their hands. I was like, how many of you have kids that are under the age of 10? Same number. I was like, I want you to go home tonight and explain to your 10-year-old exactly what you do and then ask them to explain it back to you so they can, that they coherently understand it. And if you can explain it to a 10-year-old, even if you can explain it to a 6-year-old and they can explain back exactly what mommy or daddy does, you've got a message. So play around with that. So that's funny you say that. It's like the whole idea of keep it simple, stupid. So I love that you said that. So have you always had this philosophy? I'm curious. So this idea of relationships, you said you started off in sales, you're doing direct marketing, that sort of stuff. So in terms of relationships, you spend a lot of time talking about that. Where did that philosophy come from, I'm wondering?
I think I've always had it. I think that it's been central to me. I think even as far back as, you know, I look at my parents, my childhood, my parents have always built just an incredible network around us and have always shown us the importance of every single person. Every single person you meet is highly valuable. And it's not about what you can sell them, but can they bring value to your life? Like, do you have fun hanging out with them? Do you enjoy their company? And there's so much you can get from that. And if you look at a relationship, not as, hey, that's a potential dollar sign, but in what can you teach me? What value do we get from each other? And maybe that value is you're a great person for me to go have a drink with, and you're a great person for me to play a game with. You're a great person for me to play tennis with. And if that just keeps happening in your life, you surround yourself by all of these people and this entire network of people who you just enjoy. And so it happens intrinsically. It's not a, I think the people who go out and like, I know we've all been to the trade shows where there's the networker and they're walking around with their cards and, hey, and let me shake your hand. And it's like, or we could just like go grab a beer and like have a really good chat. And like, I could find out about you and you could find out about me, and we may never work together, but maybe in 10 years, or maybe I'll tell a friend who will tell another friend, and it doesn't even matter. At the end of the day, did we enjoy it? Was it fun?
I love that you said the 10-year spot, and a lot of people don't have the patience for that because it's not a linear relationship, right? It's not like a one-to-one, hey, I met you, now we're suddenly doing business. And one of the things I talk about and teach a lot is this whole idea of the customer journey. It's literally an iterative, never-ending process. And just because it didn't work out right away with one person, if you continue to repeat the process over and over and view sort of the holistic perspective of a customer journey that's potentially always watching, always considering, always listening, then at some point you have the opportunity to convert that. In terms of you, you're a CEO of a company, you've got 100 plus employees. I'm curious, how do you sort of view the idea of relationships internally and the model that you've built and the culture that you've built with your staff?
I'm so glad that you asked that, because I think that is even more important when we think about our own staff and the people that we have here. So I have one of my top salespeople has worked for me the past 20 years in the past 6 companies that I've been at. I've taken him everywhere with me. And we have a lot of boomerangs at Billergini. And I actually think that that's one of the best things ever. I love boomerangs because it means that we built you up and you went and did something, maybe because you moved, maybe because your family instances changed, maybe because of whatever, but you trusted us enough to come back. And we built enough of a relationship with you that you wanted to come back. We've had interviews, which is so funny. I can think of like 3 off the top of my head where I've interviewed someone and been like, man, I think you're great. We just don't have a role for you right now. But they've kept in touch with me on LinkedIn, or they've kept in touch with me via text, or sent me a message every now and then. I've done the same. And we've hired at least 3 of those people a year, 2 years later, when we're like, oh man, there's a role. Wait, you know what? I talked to this guy and he was awesome and he did X, Y, and Z. And I don't even know if he's looking, but let me give him a call. And that is so much easier than going on CareerBuilder or Jazz or Indeed or anything and trying to find your next hire. And like, even from a, we pay our employees for people that they refer. Like, if you refer me to somebody, if you trust Billergini enough to refer your friend to work here, like, dude, I take that as a huge responsibility and I appreciate that so much. I'm going to pay you for that because that is so incredible that you trust us that you want to do that. So I think building that network effect internal is even more important than external, because you want people who want to be around you, who want to be doing what they're doing, who are in their zone of genius, and that you spend more time with them than your family. You got to like them. You got to enjoy it.
I like the idea of the boomerang. For those of you who are sitting in the back row, that means people who were there, then left, and then cycled back through again. Because I had to think about it for a second, what you meant. I thought you said something else. But one of the things that I sort of love is that in that model, you're basically creating a culture, right? You're creating a sustainable culture where you're building internal disciples about your business. And the funny thing about that, I don't think a lot of people realize that. A lot of people I speak to, they sort of think in like linear terms. Everything is a one-to-one relationship. And I do believe in like the idea of cause and effect, right? Inputs do equal outputs. But if your inputs are very one-dimensional, your outputs are going to be very one-dimensional, right? But on the converse of that, if you're sort of thinking about your culture and the people that you're promoting and the people that you're hiring and how you're hiring and how you're treating them within the company, those compound over time, because when they talk about who they work for or what they do in their personal relationships, their personal conversations, maybe they have a friend who's looking for a job that's multi-talented. Guess what? They light up about it. They're like, I have the coolest boss. We do the coolest things. We have culture days. We have whatever it is that you do that makes it. And I don't think a lot of people think about sort of those, you said intrinsic, but they're like intrinsic, extrinsic factors that compound over time. If you were speaking to and you were doing a culture workshop for another CEO that was struggling with some culture problems internally, maybe holding on to employees, maybe retention, maybe attitudes, whatever it is, performance models, whatnot. What are some of the things that you would say, hey, here's where we would start. This is what we should do right now to fix this.
I think there's a few things. I think the very first, and this is going to sound so trite and banal, and I get it, but know what your values are. And the values aren't like trust. Let's be nice. Like, that's not a value. A value is something that you either are failing or winning on. And I should be able to understand that. So for example, our number one core value is get shit done right. And the reason why we say that, it's not just get shit done. We expect you to do your job and we expect you to do it right. Because when it's wrong, we're going to say, yo, that's value number one. Mm. Like, we expected you to get that shit done right. And number two is catch up. It's not run faster. It's not go quick. It's catch up. We are a fast moving company. We are going to do things very, very quickly, and we expect you to keep pace. And if you want to be in a corporate culture that moves a lot slower, that's great. There are places for that. This ain't it. Mm. You know, number three is own it. And when we say that, we mean we have fuck up of the month because we want you to own your mistakes. We want you to tell us when you mess up because you're going to. Because if I knew how to do everything without making a mistake, this company would already be worth $1 billion and we wouldn't necessarily need to have any conversations. But I don't know the answers. You don't know the answers. Own your mistakes. Own what you know. Own what you don't know and be willing to talk about it. And then our other two are like class shines because it's like you have to have integrity and we have a zero tolerance policy for anything that even seems a little bit shady. And number five is believe in the genie. Like, and again, these are not just the word trust or integrity or something like that in the wall. Our entire company knows what these are. We give kudos for it. We give prizes for it. We call it out. We use fuck up of the month because of it. Everything we do is around these values. So if I was talking to another CEO, I would say, number one, I need you to come up with what are your core values that are central to who you are, not who the business is, but who are you as a person authentically. And number two is part of that, be you. People can tell when you're not and build real relationships and make space for people to be who they are as well. And that who they are may not fit in your culture. And that's okay. You have to be willing to not be the Statue of Liberty. Give me, you're tired, you're hungry, you're poor. You have to be willing to say, like, no, I don't want these people. Like, if you don't fit in this box, I don't want you. So I've got a hot pink couch and a glitter wall because that's who I am, right? I am loud. I'm sparkly. Like, I like those things. And so if I'm hiring someone who's like, oh, no, no, I like to wear a black suit every day. I like to have, you know, closed-toed like, if that was who was coming in, they probably wouldn't like this culture. And that's okay. They could be the best person in the world for the role. But if they don't like the culture and they don't fit, it's not going to work. So culture has to be your number one defining point of your company and how you hire and fire based upon your values, based upon your authenticity, based upon what everybody else is doing. And as long as you're doing that, it will become just a natural evolution of who the company is and how people are so excited to be there.
We've talked about relationships. We've talked about relationships being capital. We've talked about culture. And now we're talking about values. What's the through line for you between culture, relationships, how you show up in the world, how you treat people, and the idea of like doing values? What's the central through line for you there?
I mean, honestly, to me, it's authenticity. The through line with all of this, because whether it's networking, whether it's building an internal or external relationship, whether it's building culture, if you are not who you are, people can tell. People aren't dumb. And at the end of the day, everything we're talking about here is about people. And it's about how do you get the most from people. And I always say that, you know, over people are 70% better at their job, if not more, when they're happy. So my job, and I say this to my kids too, because I have make them keep a happiness journal, because if you can just force yourself to stay in that state of happiness, you are just more productive. So if you're trying to get that key, that unlock of how do I become a more productive, more efficient individual, how do you get to your happiest moment? Your happiest moment is usually your zone of genius. So all of these things are tied to who you are authentically. For example, I am not the most detail-oriented person. I will absolutely walk in that door because I didn't see it there, right? That is who I am. You put me in front of a room and I can talk to anybody, but you give me a spreadsheet and a calculator and tell me I need to work on a budget for 10 hours. Like, oh my God, I want to shoot myself. That's not who I am. And that is not my zone of genius. And it's not, and therefore it's someone else's. And so I'm going to activate my internal network, my external network, the people I know, the tools and the resources I have. I'm going to build a value system in the company so that people can really be in that zone of genius and be in that happy place, because their productivity and efficiency skyrockets. Isn't that what we all want?
One thing I did want to ask you, I wrote something down. It's sort of centered around the idea of values. Do you, when you're interviewing new candidates, are you asking questions around values, first of all?
Oh, yeah.
Love that. And then secondly, in terms of culture, values, culture, when you're, and I'm interested in this conversation because one of the things that I noticed when I used to work in the corporation is that the wrong people were in the wrong roles. So how much placement advocacy is going on when you're hiring people centered around the relationship that they bring to the table, not just with the job they're having, but the relationship they have with themselves? You talked about being happy and dopamine, but the relationship they have with the position they're doing, those around them, and that sort of stuff. How much does that play into your culture?
I think it is the biggest thing ever. I mean, the whole idea of right person, right seat, right bus, it's important. And I think in an interview, I always say you're looking for someone. Do they have the skills? And do they have so value? Like, do they have the desire? And do they have the skills necessary? Because that's what you're really interviewing for. At the end of the day, an interview is like a first date. And my interviews are 6 to 10 minutes long, especially my first ones, because you already, the vibes are either there or they're not. And at the end of the day, I'm interviewing in that first interview. I assume that you have the skills because you've gotten to my desk. I don't know if you have the desire and I don't know if you have the values. And so I'm interviewing for the right bus, not necessarily the right seat. Your next interview is about that right seat. And it's not just your next interview. It's your journey at Village Genie. We move people around so much. In fact, today I was talking to someone like, hey, we have a role that's opening. And if anybody's interested, we're not even sure what it is. This is what we think it is. If you think that you're interested, come and interview. And we have 5 of our 90 employees interviewing for a role that we're literally coming up with as we're doing it. Because they're like, I was like, hey, this is what I think we need. This is kind of the goal. And we're letting people from all over the organization be part of that because they get to find the right seat if they don't feel like they're in it today.
Do you often, just for curiosity's sake, move people around into different positions just so they can expand their sort of curriculum around what they're doing and maybe tap into something that you didn't even know existed in the first place?
We don't necessarily move them from position to position because there are, you know, controls and restrictions and things like that. And there's know-how that you might need to have. But I do always tell people to cross-pollinate. We talk about cross-pollination a lot. So, hey, go sit next to someone. If you don't know what they do, go sit next to someone, shadow them for half a day, learn. We also do some pretty big events in our company where we open the kimono on every single department on what they do, how they do it, what their problems are, what is their SWOT analysis, and let the rest of the company solve it for them. And that really puts them in their seat.
You drop SWOT analysis and cross-pollination in one conversation. Let's see if somebody else can do that today. You said you can never say the wrong thing to the right person. Why do you think that's true?
Because if they're the right person, being authentically you is going to be what's most important. They're going to know what you meant and how you meant it. And if it's the right person, they will understand you. I mean, I look at my husband, we got it for 28 years. And at this point, I'm like, you're my appendage. Like, you're my like left arm. Like, this isn't even like, because you just... Yeah, we obviously fight. We're just like every other couple. We obviously disagree. But at the end of the day, if you're the right person, you're going to know who I am and you're going to know what I meant. And so if I say something that feels off, you're going to have the balls to say, hey, this is what you said. This is how it made me feel. What do you think of that? And have that conversation versus if it's the wrong person, they may take that information completely differently.
That is, that's really powerful what you said. And I'm glad you brought in your husband in this. By the way, 28 years, congratulations, kudos, well done. I always sort of see relationships and romance very analogous to running a business, whether it's how you treat your employees, whether it's how you treat your customers, whether it's how you treat your ideal ICP, whatever it is, you're sort of falling in love with them and you want them to fall in love with you. No matter any way you put it, that's kind of the core competency around building a business and a relationship. So the parallels. And so one of the things that I do in one of my workshops is like, imagine if you were romancing this client without being mischievous about it. How would you go about courting this person? Like, you wouldn't be constantly selling them on how great you are. You would be sort of asking them questions. You would be curious. You'd want to get to know who they are. Like, what do they bring to the table and how the two of you complement each other? And I was like, that's exactly how you should be treating your business, because you do the same thing personally. Why would you not do the same thing professionally? So my question is, and I got some pushback on this recently from a coach, a pretty credible coach, I'm not going to say names, but she said that personal and professional should stay in their own silo and have no intersection or cross-pollination, to borrow your lexicon. What's your opinion on that?
I totally disagree. I am the same at work and with friends as I am at work, because I don't know how to be any different. And that means that I have to be able to integrate my two lives very well. And that the way that I see people, the way I speak to people has to feel the same. And look, I do think it's like a relationship. You're in a honeymoon period. When you interview someone, it's like a first date. They start with you. It's a honeymoon period, right? Everybody's really nice to each other for the first 2-3 months. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, you're that? And I just saw you. I saw you without makeup on. That ain't cool. I was catfished, right? Like, that's what happens. Like, it's like, and it's very similar. And that idea of whether it's your customer, whether it's your partner, whether it's an investor, whether it is someone you're interviewing, you've got to get behind that mask and understand who they are and build a relationship that is based upon that and based upon, again, core values. And that is a romantic relationship. It is the exact same thing. It doesn't work if you don't have the same core values, if you don't have the same, this is where we came from and this is what we believe fundamentally.
In terms of culture, I always find this to be a very interesting and precarious line. What is the balance between empowering your customers, empowering your employees, and maintaining sort of a sense of, I don't want to use the word control, but you are still running the company, right? And you still want people to sort of do the things that you think are best for the company to be managed properly, right? Like, you're not a CEO by accident, right? You obviously have the skills and the technical know-how and the relationships and all the things that you bring to the table to build a company. But at the same time, you also want people to sort of step into their own power. What is that fine line between managing people but still instilling a level of empowerment so they can grow with the culture but still add value and still have some level of autonomy?
So we talk about everything being like romance, but I think it's also like child rearing, right? Like, building a company is just like having kids, and your employees and your customers, your investors, and all of that are just different parts of that, whether they're, you know, the doting grandparents or the kids that you're trying to raise. It's all about boundaries and being very clear with who you are. And just like you are with a child, like, I have a 10 and a 13-year-old, and if I let them, they would eat ice cream all day, every day. It is their favorite food. They would do that. And so me telling them that they can't have ice cream is not because I don't, like, it's bad for you. Like, I can give them all the reasons about why it's bad for them. A 10-year-old doesn't understand me. So at the end of the day, I've just got to be like, yo, this is the rule and this is what you're doing. And I think that that's how it works within with a partner and a customer and all that too, right? Sometimes you have to say no to a customer and it sucks. But sometimes the customer asks for the moon, the stars, and the sky. And you have to be able to say, like, hey, we appreciate you. We love you. We want to work with you. But this is what we do. And these are our boundaries. And they're very clear. I think the reasons why people falter on this is because they don't take the time to create those boundaries. Like, you talked about ICP. How many people actually spend the time to say, this is our ideal customer profile? And if you don't fit in this box, and even in the little fringes around it, you probably shouldn't work with us. Mm-hmm. I think business owners get so worried about saying no, but no is the most empowering thing in a business. If you are able to say no to the people who don't fit your culture because they're an employee, who don't fit your investment practice as an investor, who don't fit your partnership model, who don't fit your thesis as a customer, when you learn to say no and really focus on building something great for those who do say yes, who do fit, you just grow miles and miles better and the velocity increases.
I'm just curious what your take on that, because as a CEO, as a leader. This whole idea of psychology and neuroscience and values and all these existential things, I think a lot of people think they don't have any place in running a business. And I couldn't argue more. Like, understanding how human behavior operates and understanding neuroscience, and you talked about dopamine earlier, and we're over here talking about values and like reclaiming all these different things and culture, like those are a bit existential, but every single one of them has a play in how you lead as a CEO. I'm just curious, in terms of all of your years and your leadership style, how has your view, like existentially, pragmatically, principally speaking, you were here and then the journey you've taken to where you are today, how has that evolved and what have been some of like the central through lines for you?
I mean, it's evolved immensely because I think you go to school and you expect this linear progression. I'm just going to go do this. I'm going to go work someplace. I'm going to work there for 25 years. I'm going to get a gold watch. I'm going to retire, right? And I think for those of us in business and most of us in life, that is nowhere near the truth, right? You have these highs, these lows, these peaks, these valleys. And the central true line for me, which is why it's interesting that you're talking about people in psychology, is people. It's the people. At the end of the day, I have people that worked with me from my very, very first job. I have people who I count on and are mentors of mine from 30 years ago. And they have made me who I am, whether it's because of who I surround myself with in my friend circle, whether it's who I attach myself with my husband, whether it's who my partner and my business partner is, whether it's who works for me, that makes me who I am in every sense of the word. And until the bots take over and until we're there, we have a responsibility to humanity and to each other to be human. And humanity is all about feelings, and people don't like to talk about it. It's so touchy-feely and oh my gosh, like, but people have feelings. People have emotions. People have responses. People are made of chemicals. People are like, that is so central to everything that happens in the world. And if you don't treat people in a manner that they want to be treated, you're not going to get to work with them, whether that's professionally, personally, like that's not going to happen. And so it's the decisions that you make. And that's not that you have to please everyone, but it's those people that you really want to be around. Have you figured out how to communicate with them at a level that makes sense to them? And do you meet them where they are?
There's a lot of intentionality in what you just said. Maybe I'm just in my own little world over here. But when I think about the most massive gains I've made in my life in terms of my mindset and my self-awareness and my psychology and all the different things that I'm actually kind of where I'm in, I feel like I'm in a really good place right now in my life. But when I look back at my journey, and while I've done a lot of really cool things, I sort of see it like in a different point of view now. And intentionality is one of the things. I don't know that I was always so intentional about mindset and treating people the way they need to be and relationships and all these things. I'm just curious, when do you think that shift happened? Was there something that occurred that or was it just sort of like a slow trickle over time?
I think I got kicked in the face a million times, right? Like I was at career day at my daughter's school last week. And I said, the first thing I said to them is like, I don't care what your plan is. You're about to get punched in the face and you probably already have and don't even know it. And that is what your life is going to be. And I think that I've been punched in the face a lot, right? Like I went to school for advertising mass communications. I thought I was going to make a Super Bowl commercial. I went to a great school. I graduated early and I ended up in outside sales door to door. Right. And I did that on purpose. I chose that, but you get kicked in the face 50 to 60 times a day. People saying no, no soliciting. Like, and you have to start understanding who you are, why you are, and realizing that people want to buy from people that they like. And you start seeing, okay, well, when I surround myself with losers, I'm not growing. And they all want to go out and party all night. And that's great. I just can't do that because I want to show up the next day and I want to win. And you start realizing who you are. And that starts defining the scope of very little of who are the people you surround yourself with. Okay, now who are your customers? Okay, now who are your partners? And that scope just keeps widening over time. And so I don't think it's intentionality. I think it's life kicks you a few times and you're like, oh shit, I should care. Like I should start thinking about this differently because it doesn't matter what I want. It doesn't matter that I had this beautiful picture in my head that I was going to be 20 years old making a Super Bowl. No one cares. No one cares. They only care what I'm doing in this moment today and how I'm going to help them. It's what have you done for me lately? And when you start realizing that and you start understanding that everybody, no matter whether it's on purpose or not or subconsciously, There is a what's in it for me.
Always.
We're going to have this conversation. What's in it for me? And that could be as something as simple as a giggle. It could be as simple as just a release. And it doesn't matter. But what's in it for me is so central to everything we do. And you got to think that way.
In order to be so intentional, you have to be self-aware and be willing to understand that you might have gaps in your development and how you're showing up in the world. Because if you don't, then how are you ever going to make those adjustments? So I still want to get to the point, outside of getting kicked in the face, was there sort of like this aha moment that you were like, or was it just sort of like, it's just a slow matriculation?
I think it's slow matriculation. I think it's getting old. I think it's realizing that you can't please everyone. I think it's just looking around and being like, you know, you talked about gratitude, looking around and be like, man, I'm so happy about, like, I'm so grateful for where I am. I'm so happy for where I am. And these are the people, like, these are the people's shoulders I climbed on to get there. And man, how cool were they? How amazing was that?
Does relationship capital mean to you? Is it around consistency? Is it more centered around this whole idea of trust? These are all the things that we've talked about. Authenticity, shared values, culture. At the end of the day, what is relationship capital intentionally for you?
For me, it's trust first. I would say trust comes first because authenticity and values and all of that, to me, are baked into trust. But I have to trust. You may not have the same values as me, but if I trust you to not hurt me, and I trust you that you're a good person, that you're going to be ethical, and you're going to understand the difference between right and wrong, and if we are morally the same, that trust to me is just foundational, right? People are just generally good, and so you can trust them until you lose my trust. But if I trust you, I'm going to expect the best from you, and I'm going to expect that you're going to trust me as well.
All right, you ready for the hot seat round?
Let's do
it. You don't get to think about them, just quick answers. I'm going to rattle off 5 questions. Just want to see how your mind thinks.
And this is going to be about physics, right?
Yeah. This is relationship versus strategy. What drives more growth in a company long term? Better strategy or better relationships?
Relationships.
Why?
Because you can have the best strategy in the world. If no one wants to buy it because you can't build a relationship with your customer, you're dead in the water.
Question number 2, comfort versus courage. Which kills more opportunity for entrepreneurs? Fear of rejection or fear of truly being seen?
Probably fear of rejection. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, I think Vice included, you always, you know, perfection is the evil of, is the enemy of good, right? And so that idea that you're going to get rejected because it's not perfect makes people ideate for too long and analysis paralysis happens because you're afraid of that rejection. And sometimes just getting something out and testing the market is better than not doing anything. So take action.
What actually creates more opportunity, a massive network or 5 people who deeply trust you?
I think your network should deeply trust you. So I'm probably not the right person to answer that because I think that your network is those who deeply trust you. I think everybody else is superficial. And so it's about whoever trusts you, but it's not 5 people. You should have a pretty large network, and you should, if you don't, go find one and go get people to trust you.
All right. Hustle versus alignment. This is a really important term for me. Which matters more for long-term success, working harder or working with the right people?
I think that this is an evolution. I think that when you're first starting out as a solopreneur, hustle is all that matters. I think as you start growing, and I'm feeling this inflection point now, when you're at 80, 90, 100 employees, you are like the Titanic and it's a lot harder to turn. And you can't do it just based on hustle, alignment, and getting people on the same ship as you so that you can all turn in the same direction or row in the same direction is what matters. So I think that that is an evolving thing depending on the size of the business.
Where do most entrepreneurs miss their biggest opportunity? Not finding new people or ignoring the people already in their circle?
Ignoring the people in their circle every day.
I love it.
People just always want to go find that shiny new object, and sometimes it's not there. Also, often entrepreneurs like both of us tend to be visionary and speak in hyperbole and get so excited about what's coming down the pipe. And it's like, well, you already had it and you didn't save it.
I love it. All right. If people want to come work for you, where do they find you?
www.billergenie.com, or you can email us anytime at info@billergenie.com.
So that was Billergenie for those of you who cannot keep up with that. What a fascinating conversation. My favorite guest so far in the last 20 episodes. Thank you. Don't be offended. Everyone else is listening. Really dynamic. There's just a lot of things that we uncovered here. I was like 2 pages of notes I was taking on. And again, I'm going to turn every one of these into a content reel, and I'll give you credit for like 2 or 3 of them. But
perfect.
I think it's a really important reminder that, you know, for me, like, so sort of some of the takeaways for me is, you know, technology and marketing, they're definitely important in your business. Obviously, branding is a central through line. But really, when it comes down to it, whether you are an entrepreneur or a solopreneur or managing 100 people, it really is about the culture of your ecosystem and the relationships that you build. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, your reputation is going to be based upon who you are as a human and how you show up and what people think of you, whether you're selling something or trying to build a relationship or get into a romantic partnership with somebody. Ultimately, your reputation is your DNA. And if you can't say safely, look at yourself in the mirror and be like, you know what, I kind of like myself and how I'm showing up, then you might want to do some deep work. So, Grima, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate the conversation and I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. If you're ever in Orlando, look me up.
For anyone who is listening to the show, first of all, thank you for being here. I know that you have choices when it comes to podcasts and literally millions of them, but I really appreciate you being here and listening to this episode. That was a fantastic conversation. And Grima really dropped. She did drop. I'm looking at my notebook over here. We talked about so many cool things, culture and value and empowerment and ingenuity and self-awareness and just all the different things. It was very a very deep and meaningful show. So the through line again is trust, connection, relationships. And if anybody wants to visit her or work for her, please check her out. Her email she just dropped and her website URL are in the notes below. And for anybody who wants to be a guest on the Brand Laboratory, if you enjoy conversations like this, conversations that actually go somewhere, that actually have some depth, that actually have some meaning, they're not just like static interviews, hit me up, man. I'd love to have you on. If you've got a cool message, if you have a cool presence and a microphone, and you have a business that you're trying to build and you want to have a conversation about what it is you're doing, that's what we do here at the lab, man. We just break it down. We have a conversation. We just shoot the shit. And there's always some central takeaway. And today there was like 20 takeaways. So anyhow, I'm really excited. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to speak to you in this platform. And I hope that our paths cross soon, my brother, my sister. Be good. All right. That's it for today, folks. Thank you. If this episode hit you, like it, subscribe it, leave a review. It helps a lot more than you think. And it helps the right people find this show and help us keep growing so we can continue to produce amazing episodes. You can find me at thebrandstoryteller.com if you're interested in connecting with me. And everything else about this episode, the guest, the websites, the social media handles, they are all linked below. I'll see you in the next show.